and welcome to a new edition of Mercenary Musings Radio, a bi-weekly audio program featuring mining analyst and commodities expert, the mercenary geologist, Mickey Fulp. We are your most trusted source for in-depth analysis and commentary on commodities, mining, and the junior resource sector. Surf Lords kicking off a new edition of Mercenary Musings Radio. We have on the line the mercenary geologist himself, Mickey Fulp. Mickey, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm back at the farm here and trying to make it through a very cold and snowy winter for New Mexico.
Cold and snowy in New Mexico. I've got green grass, no snow in front of my house here in Canada, Mickey, so things don't always play out as a lot of people think they should. A big topic on our plate today, and that is, will the Earth ever run out of natural resources? I know that you've looked at this question before. I mean, we've been, about 10,000 years, modern mankind has been, pulling stuff out of the ground, using natural resources for the betterment of society and to make things that we need in everyday life. Do you think we'll ever run out of a natural resource?
Well, I would say an unequivocal no to that question, but with one exception. And I was asked this question probably about 6 years ago and did some research. One thing immediately popped in my mind. Man is forever since we formed societies, as you alluded to 10,000 years ago. We have exploited the highest grade and the simplest to extract and the most easily processed of any natural resource, and really we're talking about metallic commodities.
Right.
Nine metals were known and mined during historic times, and we've talked about most of this in the show over the, about a five-year period now. Mm-hmm. Iron, copper, zinc, silver, tin, gold, mercury, lead, and bismuth were the metals that were known. We progress and we exploit the easily extracted ores, we've progressively mined lower grades, greater depths, more remote areas, and minerals requiring more complex processing.
And let's get back to that exception. You said there's one exception, though. You did find something really interesting in your research.
Well, I did, and I kind of had this in the back of my head when I was first asked the question, and I deferred on the question until I could do some research. But the question is about natural resources, and in that regard, I would restrict the discussion to non-living natural resources. And the reasoning is pretty simple. Life's existed for a minimum of 3.4 out of 4.5 billion years in its history, and very early life forms, the stromatolites, still exist today. That said, there are very few long-lived species on the Earth. Essentially, species evolve, go extinct, and are replaced by something else. You know, we have the stromatolites, which are blue-green algae. We have horseshoe crabs, which have been around 425 million years. We have some fish that have been around about 400 million years. And then about 100 million years ago, primitive animals, sharks included, and, of course, the ubiquitous cockroach. But with that said, if we look at non-living natural resources, we have exhausted one, and that is bird guano.
Bird poop.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So, in fact, guano is the Spanish version of a Peruvian Quechua name, and Quechuas are ancestors are the Incas, but that word actually means dung. And so in 1804, the famous explorer von Humboldt, for whom the current is named, the Humboldt Current, took a voyage to Western South America and returned to Europe carrying samples of bird guano, which became the most rich fertilizer that had ever been found on the earth, and it soon became a very sought after commodity, especially by British farmers, and the British being the types of people they are, and foreign mining syndicates. And pretty soon they were exploiting these deposits off of islands on the central coast of Peru.
Mm-hmm. And I understand, I mean, you just outlined a great history of this, Mickey. It took a very, very, very long time for this resource to accumulate. It only took about 35 years to almost wipe it right out.
Well, that's true. You know, the Peruvian guano deposits are kind of unique, and it has to do with climate and geology. They occurred on remote islands offshore. They were remote and inaccessible, therefore protected from predators. You have the cold upwelling currents of the Humboldt Current, which resulted in the world's richest fisheries.
Mm-hmm.
There are limited land surfaces on these islands for birds to roost and nest. And then there were massive populations of boobies and cormorants and pelicans. In addition, you had clammy, if you will, but a hyper-arid climate. So these guano deposits were not washed away by rains or anything.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them were 40 meters high, and from 1840 to about 1874, they supplied the world with fertilizer and also saltpeter, which is used to make gunpowder, resulted in was the world's first large agricultural mines. But by 1874, they were mined out.
Yeah. And when they were mined out, the resources pretty well exhausted, Mickey, as a source of fertilizers. Man just went out and found other sources for fertilizers, such as a potassium nitrate.
Man did. You know, there was still great demand. You can grow a lot more crops when you put good fertilizer on it. So this guano trade resulted in the bankruptcy of the Peruvian government. Not surprising. They took out loans against the future mining, spent all the money, wasted it away, and then the country was bankrupt. And then in 1879, man discovered, very high-grade nitrate deposits in the Atacama Desert of Chile, and that led to the War of the Pacific. It led to Chile defeating both Bolivia and Peru, which resulted in Bolivia becoming landlocked, which it remains today,
mm-hmm.
and Peru gave up its extreme southern territory in the northern part of what is now Chile. That area today hosts the world's largest copper, molybdenum, iodine, nitrate, and lithium deposit.
Okay, now in terms of
total mining of this guano in about 30 years was over 20 million tons. Some deposits were 40 meters thick, and they don't exist today, but we found the nitrate deposits in the Atacama Desert of Chile, which supplied the world with nitrate fertilizers for about another 45 years.
With the nitrates not lasting very long at all, how did we advance this this story to basically keep a nice steady supply coming onto the market? And I believe that brings into the discussion the Haber process.
Well, it does. So the nitrate deposits, although very rich in the Atacama Desert, are expensive to exploit. And along comes a couple of new processes which were able to fix nitrogen from the air, and that's the Haber process, which was originally developed pre-World War I by Haber, a German metallurgist, which fixes nitrogen from the air. And the real motivation of Haber was for gunpowder explosives, and this was the source of German nitrates used in World War I. But by the end of the war, fertilizer became the main use, and as we alluded to last week, talked about last week,
mm-hmm.
this is one of the world's largest industries, the use of ammonium nitrate for fertilizer and also explosives.
Okay, well, let's bring into the conversation the Malthusium versus cornucopium debate. I've known you, Mickey, for a good 6-7 years now, and I'm betting that you're leaning towards the cornucopium camp, but give us a bit of a history lesson here. We're talking about one side is very pessimistic about the outlook for mankind and what's needed to really keep the planet ticking along nicely. The other side is a lot more optimistic.
Well, that's true, and it's kind of a glass half empty, glass half full scenario. And on one side, you have the so-called Malthusians, named after Thomas Malthus, who was a famous British philosopher slash economist, deep thinker type, who had a very pessimistic view of the world, and in 1798 wrote a treatise about how the world's population growth was going to soon exhaust all the natural resources on the earth. This idea has been reconstituted, especially in the late 1960s and early 1970s, and continues through today by the beginnings of the environmental movement, Barry Commoner, Paul Ehrlich, who wrote The Population Bomb, a famous book from about 1972 or something called The Limits to Growth by a bunch of think tank types and rich people called the Club of Rome. They predicted and give exponential curves showing how by the year 2000 we were going to exhaust all the natural resources on the planet. I tend to take the optimistic view, the glass half full view, and we would be called cornucopians. As you know, a cornucopia is a bounty of whatever, oftentimes refers to food. But it is my contention, and people on this side of the equation, that man will find what he needs when he needs to use it. And I've just given you an example of that, and that would be we needed nitrates. We found the guano deposits. We mined them out. We soon found rich nitrate deposits in the Atacama of Chile. And then we found a better way to do it, and we fixed atmospheric nitrogen, which is an unlimited supply. So It is my contention that the world has an unlimited supply of what we need, and the economics, the supply-demand fundamentals, when we need it, we will be able to get it, or we'll find substitutes for it.
And I think the energy group is a good example as well. Look at fracking and look at what that has done to supplies of natural gas and oil.
Well, most certainly, and your point is well taken, and thank you for reminding me that I wanted to talk about this concept, and that's peak oil. Mm-hmm. And over the last 5 years, when the oil price boomed and the shale production boomed, here came the peak oil guys and said, this is not sustainable. The world's going to run out of oil. Well, au contraire, you know, the world has been for about 300 million years now, for about 550 million years since the Cambrian, we've been accumulating organic rich sediments, which eventually make oil, and it becomes a matter of the economics of getting it out of the ground. You know, that $100 barrel of oil has now resulted in a huge glut of oil worldwide. Yep. We're swimming in oil. We don't know where to store all the oil. We're running out of storage, and of course the price falls, and then what happens is production gets shut in, hopefully soon, and the price will rebound, and it's my contention we'll find whatever we need, whenever we need to do it. Do not discount the technology and innovation of mankind.
Okay. How would that apply to, and I think, personally, I think this is probably the most critical issue that's facing mankind in terms of a natural resource, and that is the availability of fresh water, Mickey. We've got 97.5% of all water on Earth being salt water, only 2.5% fresh water, and nearly 70% of that fresh water is frozen in the ice caps. So that is an area of concern, is it not?
Well, we're just going to have to desalinate water at some point. At some point, it will become economic. You know, it's kind of crazy to me that a gallon of oil, a barrel of oil, costs way more than a barrel of water does. I mean, the world runs on energy, and our present lifestyle requires oil. Oil runs the world, basically. But, you know, we can only live about 7 days without fresh water. But we've got plenty of water on the earth. We have desalinization plants. We have the technology. It's expensive. But If we need fresh water, we'll find it. Mm-hmm. You know, sitting around here in New Mexico, and we live in a desert, but we have immense underground resources of water. Significant amount of that's fresh water. We exploit that somewhat. We are being very cautious and trying not to deplete our freshwater supplies. But we have deep, salty basins here, lots of them with abundant supplies of water. And at some point, it's going to become economic to pump that water out and desalinate it. And I don't think any of us are going to go thirsty.
Okay. Well, it's a good way to end things on an optimistic note, Mickey. We have the Surf Lords playing in the background. Any ideas for next time out?
I think we'll go back to the periodic table. We've got a few more elements. And we're going to work our way through. So my idea, since we covered the nitrates, nitrogen, and the nitrates, we probably ought to jump a couple of places and look at the world's fertilizer supply. So that would include phosphorus and sulfur and potassium. We've already talked a couple of times about potassium.
Right.
But I think we'll do phosphorus next time.
Okay, good stuff. Looking forward to it, Mickey. We'll reconnect in a couple of weeks. Talk to you then.
Okay, thanks a lot, Rob.
That's Mickey Fulp, the Mercenary Geologist. You can find him on the web at mercenarygeologist.com. And you can always hear Mickey's latest opinion exclusively on mercenarygeologist.fm and kitco.com. I'm Robert Graham at Mercenary Musings Radio. Thanks for listening.